You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. In January, the British Columbia Ministry of Forests trapped and airlifted the last remaining caribou in the Selkirk Mountain Range. They moved that caribou farther north into Canada. Now, this particular species of caribou is the most endangered animal in America. And this relocation is the result of a 35-year effort to preserve the mountain caribou. Reporter Rocky Barker covered the decline of the mountain caribou for the Idaho Statesman as a special correspondent. And he is joining me live in studio to talk more about this. Always good to have you here, Rocky.
Good to be here, Gemma.
Okay, so just tell me why the airlift happened.
So they'd been watching in the last few years. The numbers really dropped quickly. Mm-hmm. They put a whole, three different packs of wolves had moved into the area, and they were, you know, suddenly eating them out of house and home. And it came down to last spring, there were three caribou left. And then this, in January, they only could find one of them. And so they decided, there were two over in another mountain range to the east, the Purcells. They decided to take those three animals and move them to another herd about, 80 miles north of there. And that's important because there's only 1,200 of these mountain caribou left on Earth. And so they needed those three for the genetics for this other still endangered herd. But what it meant for us in the United States is that they're now extinct in the United States.
So take me back to 1987 when the caribou were moved to the Selkirk Range, because there was an effort to preserve them, correct?
That's right. So in 1983, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service declared mountain caribou an endangered species in the United States. It was kind of the end of a long run of woodland caribou, which is a little bit larger population that was here when settlement started. And then they actually lived all the way as far south as the Salmon River. But by the 1980s, their habitat had been really changed, opened up. And when they had a lot of open habitat, that meant the deer moved in. When the deer moved in, the predators moved in. Mm-hmm. And also a disease called brainworm, a parasite that deer don't die with, but the caribou did. Oh. So they decided, okay, we don't quite have enough. Let's jumpstart this population. They had about 46 in the 80s. So they added another 60 to 70. Mm-hmm. And they were hoping that would be enough.
But it ended up not being.
It turned out, no, it didn't.
And was a lot of that because the numbers did start going down again. Was it because, as you talked about, with the predators coming in?
Yes, it was the predators. But, it's what happened here was this ecosystem in the Selkirks that kind of runs into Canada. Mm-hmm. It also spreads into Washington. Beautiful mountain range. Basically, the ecosystem came unraveled, in a sense. These are very specialized caribou. They have big hoofs that allowed them to walk on top of like 10-foot deep snow so that they could reach the lichens on the bark of the trees. And so when the deer, when they did a lot of clear cutting in there in the starting in the 50s
right.
and going
all the way through
up,
the 80s.
Yeah. Here in the U.S., all the way through the 80s, but all the way into today on the Canadian side. The Canadians never quit cutting. And so
right. okay.
that just kept allowing, in those clear cuts, it'd grow up again in young trees. More deer would come in, more predators, mountain lions, and wolves. And they just, they actually were going up. The population was rising as late as 2009, but from 2009 to today, it just dove.
So a big part of that, from what I'm hearing you say, then, is also the potential that there was not enough food for the caribou then with the clear cutting.
Well, no, they had the food.
Okay,
but the problem was there was now access to them. The predators, historically, those predators, they couldn't walk on top of that snow. They didn't have that specialized...
So it was easier for them to find them.
That's right. They were able to get into the high country through those clear cuts, through that country. And the deer had... they could live off the high numbers of deer. They couldn't live off of the caribou. Mm. If you're a wolf, you were going to starve if you were going to eat only mountain caribou. But you still had lots of other deer that you could eat.
I'm speaking with special correspondent for the Idaho Statesman, Rocky Barker. We're talking about the caribou in the Selkirk Mountain Range being taken back into Canada. So, Rocky, in this piece that you wrote, you said, and I'm quoting, "This is what extinction looks like." Talk to me about that, because if they still exist, they're not extinct, but they're no longer in the United States, and we will likely never see them here again.
That's true. The habit, this is kind of the end of this long-term process that began in the 1800s. And in the 1980s, there was this little pocket of population that we tried to hold on to.
Mm-hmm.
And it was hard because the locals still were never big fans of the caribou because the caribou were threatening their timber mills. And they perceived they were. Today, I think the timber industry is very supportive of the program. And the timber industry and the environmentalist up there have actually become very collaborative, work together. There isn't that kind of conflict anymore. But the community just never around there never fell in love with those caribou. So, you know, if you're going to keep a species, it needs a lot of space. It needs, all kinds of work to do when they get to the point that these were. And, you know, while we cared, I don't think we cared enough. Mm. And that's a sad story to me. I wrote a book in the early 90s called Saving All the Parts, which was about the Endangered Species Act. And I had the mountain caribou was in the book, and this is the only species that I had included that is now extinct in the United States.
And that's kind of a hard pill to swallow when we talk about conservation in the United States, because is it almost like, you know what, there's one left. There's no way that we can continue to try to preserve this animal. The next best thing is to put them with this herd in Canada?
Yeah, and maybe sometime in the far distant future they might reintroduce them. But again, you've got to have people who care.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to have a big range where you're going to allow their habitat to survive, because we've done this actually over the course of time. There's a gentleman up in Moscow, Michael Scott, who was in charge of the California Condor Program. And he, you know, I still remember watching him on television when they took them out of the wild. You know, he was in tears.
Mm-hmm.
That he had tried everything desperately to keep these animals alive in the wild, and then he had to pull them out. And then, we have successfully reintroduced them into the wild. But the problem is one of the things that was killing them was high lead that they were absorbing from the soil that largely came from, mm-hmm. Guns, mm-hmm. shooting. And so those kind of these big picture problems, we can't simply save them just by putting, mm-hmm. Holding on to a few species.
And when we look at Canada and the Canadian government, and if they are still clear cutting, do they care enough to maintain the population, in your opinion?
Well, I think the Canadian government, we talk about one of the things that happened. We went through what they called the timber wars, where we cut back on timber harvest on our national forest in the 80s. They actually increased timber harvest at that time because they have a belief that in what they call community stability, and they subsidize, they'll sell that timber at a complete loss so that those mills and those rural communities, British Columbia and Alberta, have a supply to keep those jobs and mills open. We don't do this here in part because we don't believe in subsidizing things as much as the Canadians do. And so the trade-off, up there they still feel very strongly, and they're still cutting timber that we wouldn't be cutting here in the Selkirks. So,
and what can we as just a society and a culture learn from this?
Well, that's what I hope we do learn, because, we're the fastest growing state in the union,
mm-hmm.
and we're going to have, You know, we've also seen things like, remember Lonesome Larry the sockeye?
Right.
You know, yeah. Lonesome Larry was the last. From Lonesome Larry came another captive breeding program that, frankly, has been a great success up to now. But still, the sockeye, don't have a good migration route.
Mm-hmm.
They still need that migration route that drove them their numbers down in the first place. And now climate change, the same, which was an issue for caribou. So we have to, if we want to save species, we've got to take a kind of open and tough look at what it takes to save all the parts, so to speak.
So this is really hopefully an educational opportunity then when we look at this to make a different way if we get to this point with another animal.
I hope so. And, you know, one of the people I interviewed for this story was a teacher from Lake Hazel School who used the caribou in the 1980s from the Adopt Caribou program as a education tool.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder how many of those kids who would have been, you know, in elementary kids in the 80s are now sitting here, you know, wondering, you know, what happened to Hazel? What happened to the other caribou? And mm-hmm. What are going to be the Hazels of the 35 years from now, you know?
And that's the question. Rocky, always good to have you in. Thank you for talking to us about this. I've been talking with special correspondent for the Idaho Statesman, Rocky Barker, about the mountain caribou and how they are extinct in the United States. Thank you, Rocky. Good to have you with us.
Thank you.